tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Welcome to episode 106 of In Tech We Trust. I'm Edean Porter de Leon.
I'm Rick Vanover.
And I'm Gabriel Chapman.
All right. Lots of news this week, starting out with the Nutanix IPO. BlackBerry says it's done designing and building its own phones. No one saw that coming. Partnership on artificial intelligence formed by Google, Facebook, Amazon, IBM, and Microsoft. There's a think tank for you. An outage knocks at all major phone providers on the East Coast. That's inconvenient for many people. And Yahoo secretly scanned customer emails for U.S. intelligence. Yahoo is not really able to catch a break while it's trying to catch a bid right now. So, Rick, why don't you start off with the Nutanix IPO? I know you can illuminate that for us.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about Nutanix quite a bit on the show, right? They're good, aggressive. You know, as everyone knows, they're in a hyperconverged space, and arguably one of the first to kind of make it, you know, a household name in terms of hyperconvergence. They, you know, they made that. They pierced the market for it. They've gone through a lot of rounds of financing and a lot of marketing, right? A lot of, you know, you see them at events, and they're pushy, right? They're taking risks, is what I mean by that, you know, and they're real aggressive. And the big day, I guess it was it Thursday of last week?
It was Friday.
Friday, yeah. You're right. They opened up, and I believe the IPO did happen. And, you know, that was a good day for them. And it opened at $26.50. And on that day, I think it hit a high mark in the 30s, almost to 40, but I can't quite remember what it closed at. But today, as on the 5th here, it closed at 36.18. What I like here is that there's volume. You know, so it's moving, so it's not just a splash and then it got quiet. So even yet today, there's still some action. So, you know, good for them. I know, you know, personal opinions aside, that's a company that's worked a lot to get to that point. The real question is, what's going to happen in, you know, at the end of the year? They're going to have to do a filing, and we're going to have to see how profitable they are, because I've actually been kind of curious of that, you know, especially with now VC funding isn't going to be an option. So the next 3 to 6 months or slash year, that's what's going to be important. So I'm kind of excited for them and excited for the market. And that is at a higher level going to be a significant indication of like a validation for hyperconvergence. And I know that hyperconvergence is legit, but it'll get basically proven by this.
Yeah. Do you think this is a validation? And I know, Gabe, you've got a lot of opinions on this as well about the IPO market in general, because a lot of people were saying it was dead. Like, do not IPO in this market. And I'm sure a lot of people, you know, a lot of wise, quote unquote, people were telling them to wait a little bit, wait till it gets hot. But so they're a little bit of a pioneer out here. Are you think they're cracking this IPO market open, or do you think they're an anomaly?
No, what I think it is it's, you know, you can never time the market. Anybody who tries will fail. I've seen different opinions on this because, A, if you look at their price spec, it was like, what, between 12 and 16 bucks a share is what they initially wanted to offer at. It came out, went hot really quick. So if you underpriced your IPO, you know, there are pros and cons to that for the investors. There's pros and cons to that to the employees and several others. I mean, obviously, I think, you know, the market as a whole might be a little bit overheated, and this is a reaction to that. We haven't had a serious infrastructure-based IPO in quite some time. I think the last one was Pure. And, I mean, but overall, it sets a really good tone for Tintree and Simplivity and some of the others who might want to join and jump into that. What will remain to be seen is what happens when they file their first set of earnings and the result of that, right? So you see a hype cycle right now. You see something hot. You see something that's been marketed really well. You see a company that's been growing, but also spending a lot based on the S1 filings that they did. And they did 3 revisions of S1. You know, they're still spending a lot of money to get that revenue. At $400 million revenue, you know, that's not a lot of money. And if you start to look at that revenue model versus their earnings, you know, their PE ratios aren't out there yet, right? So there's a lot of speculation out there. And I think also, if you look at high volume, which was what, 22 million shares traded, You know, that's algos, that's that's institutional investors. It's not your rank and file mom and pop. I know a lot of people that tried to get in on the IPO, and there was just no way in hell it was going to happen because they weren't doing, you know, they didn't have $250K with an investment house. They weren't doing, 60 trades a month type of thing. You know, your average person can't buy an IPO. They're restricted for specific customers and investors. And so, I don't even know how much of the market today that is trading is actually humans. You know, the vast majority.
It's in the 70th percentile. It's around 75% of the trading is by machines. And in the cases like this, just like you said, Gabe, about half the institutions get about half their position teased out to them, and as a nice good teaser so that they can pour on the fees to a lot of the brokerage houses that that put these deals on. And then the aftermarket, they get to finish their position, so they get to buy the other half of their positions. That gives them a pop. On the first half they had on the deal, none of the people who want to, get in this unless a part of these large institutional investors really get any of this action at all. So it's a lot of, it's a lot of hype for people who are excited about it and wish, like, oh, I should have bought Nutanix. Like, don't worry, if you're listening to this, don't worry, you didn't miss out on anything because you didn't have an opportunity to get in on anything. So don't buy it now because it's going to be like LinkedIn where it popped and it's going to go down. But I think eventually it's going to find a nice, some stable legs, and then it's going to start.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it today, it's down 5%. You know, it's back to 36. It was up to 41 or 42.
Bad after going up 131%. That's not
right.
That's not
too
bad.
You can't complain about that, right? Like I said, it's going to be interesting to see what happens when they have to start reporting earnings, and that's when the proof is in the pudding. And there's a lockout period that's 180 days for the people that were involved in the organization. The most frustrating thing you can see is to see your stock jump way the hell up and be absolutely frozen out of being able to unload it or sell it. I had that when I was at mortgage.com. I've seen that at multiple different companies over the course of my career. And it is, it's disheartening. Like, one day you're a paper millionaire, the next day you're like, you're underwater. So, I give them all the props and kudos because just getting to the IPO portion of their trajectory is a big accomplishment. It's something that very few companies actually ever get to do. And I even put it out on Twitter. I said, I know I rag on these guys a lot, but the reality is they've accomplished something that's very unique and it's very special, and they should be lauded for it, right? We'll see what happens as things go forward.
You brought up a good point, though, Gabe. That's also telling everybody that the market can handle an IPO right now. So that's actually very valuable from what they've done from our sector, especially hardware.
Ultimately, these are not hardware products, right? I mean, they're packaged as such, because that's an easy route to market, and it lets you control your destiny to a certain extent and whatnot. If you were to ask Diraj or anybody there, they would say, we are a software company, we are a software construct, we are a data center operating system. Ultimately, that's what they've kind of pivoted to. If you go back to 2011 and look at them, they were no SAN, which is total BS. But today, they are building something that is more of a full-stack solution. That's ultimately what I think HCI needs to be, but also it needs to be something that can sit on any piece of commodity hardware, and that takes time and effort and a lot of engineering and a very intricate HCL and things like that.
So I think the underpinning of what you guys are really talking about too is that from a IPO market standpoint, really, is that it's not like the days where any tech company could go IPO and have their stock pop simply because there was so much demand for these IPOs and they were just being doled out left and right and they were being engineered to have that nice pop. I think we're really seeing a market where that can happen, but you can only have that happen with a best of breed company. So Nutanix in this space is a best of breed going IPO, and they're able to have the demand, or able to, to command that type of demand and be able to see that type of pop. The other one, with Twilio and what is it, Aptio and Trade Desk and some of these other ones that just went IPO, Everbridge. I mean, has anyone even heard of that IPO? You're not getting those. So I think this is not that same. So don't get me wrong. I'm not advocating this is the same type of market where everything was popping. It's looking like it's really only best of breed right now.
Popping and locking.
Well, on that note, I'll just share a little bit of fun a fun fact where Druva, the company that I work for, actually just raised a nice tidy Series E, which we're really excited about, which just puts us on a nice track to go IPO. So we're hoping to follow in the footsteps of Nutanix, and I think it's really exciting for me personally to see this happen into the marketplace because it bodes well for all the work that I'm putting in day in and day out. But you got your big exit, didn't you, Gabe? Aren't you rolling in? Aren't you starting your own VC company now after that takeover?
I basically, you know, I live in I have a golden toilet right now.
I spray not just those gold covers,
golden ones. Brown.
No, I, like I said, most exits are for the rank and file employees at bathroom remodel. I just happened to get some gold spray paint. Now I have a golden toilet. So
okay,
I did not make up like a bandit. No,
Aaron said he could fix his driveway.
Yes, he did. Yeah. I mean, and that's the reality of it, right? Like, unless you're part of the core seven, unless you're somebody who comes in as a fixer towards the end to get the pop in the IPO, you're not going to get a percentage of the company that you could even recognize with a calculator, right?
What did Mark say? Walking around money.
Yeah. It's like, you know what? I could buy like a couple pairs of shoes. And you know, I mean, I'm not downplaying it because I mean, I got some okay money, right? But it's not changing my life at any level.
Well, you still got to work.
Oh, yeah.
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 You still got to show up to work.
I'm in Amsterdam. I flew to Amsterdam yesterday or this morning. All right. I guess I got here this morning. I'm here for less than 24 hours to turn around and fly back. I'm definitely working.
To pivot on something that's, I think, equally as interesting or not, but I think a lot of people saw coming, BlackBerry says it's done designing and building its own phones. And so I think this is the last nail in the hardware coffin, obviously, and a long part of that long sort of slow death. Where what's their new business model is now? It's suing other people for IP and what is it exactly? Do you guys have any idea?
They want to provide mobile device software, right? I mean that's right.
They're a software company.
That's a real place to be, eh? Mm-hmm. You know what? No one's surprised. You know, if anyone's surprised, the surprise is that it wasn't the whole thing stopping.
Yeah.
But you know what's actually shocking is I was looking at this the other day, unrelated to our podcast and our deep levels of preparation. But when I was looking at BlackBerry, I always try to look at some basics, you know, when I look at companies, right? Because I've been in the business long enough. But what I was really surprised at is how much revenue BlackBerry still had last year. And as last year, it was, I think, $2.6 billion, which doesn't that sound high for the market, right?
To really stay in business, they had to sell 5 million phones, and they're only selling about 3 million.
Understood. But there's still some money. There's just a matter of enough and all. But nonetheless, I mean, I'm not surprised.
Well, they're a company. They're definitely a company.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because I – actually, I'm not telling too much of the story, but 10 years ago or so, I administered one of the largest BlackBerry installations in the world that did not use email, pushing mobile apps and like a mobile workforce type of thing. So I personally had experience doing something like that. And it was very advanced at the time. And it was very complicated. But you know what? BlackBerry just killed it and nailed it. They did great at that. Now, you know, the industry's changed. People are choosing other devices, you know, and this stuff happens. So, not surprised.
Yeah, I mean, at their peak, they were, what, $138 a share and like $75 billion market cap. And they're like $7 a share now and $4 billion. And it's, you know, it's a respectable company. BlackBerry's issue has always been that, you know, they missed the app ecosystem and the digital transformation. And, you know, when you have to download an app to get to the App Store, and it's the kludgiest piece of crap you've ever dealt with, guess what? You missed the boat.
And they still have the best keyboard, though.
Yeah, well, that's just it. It's the best keyboard, which is a physical construct. And, you know, look, iPhone 7 doesn't even have a headphone jack. You know, the direction that the market is going is not where BlackBerry or RIM had forethought or vision. And that's why they are where they are today. Same thing with Nokia, right? And so, you know, if you look at it, I do this in one of my talks. I talk about digital transformation and the fact that, you know, 80% of the stuff I do on a daily basis is on my phone.
You know, and in that respect, that's probably common for a lot of people.
All right, so I think we've flogged BlackBerry enough. I know the market has. So there was an outage on the East Coast that knocked out all the major providers. Gabe, you got to experience that firsthand, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, T-Mobile took a big dump. I couldn't even use it for like 2 days. It was awful. And here's the crazy thing. I was in – it affected me on the West Coast. And the thing was funny about it was like I was at a movie theater in Sunnyvale and I had to go back to my hotel and I couldn't get Google Maps to work and I had no idea how to get back.
Oh, and then you couldn't do Uber either.
Yeah, see, that's –
I was completely isolated. I'm like, oh, my God, what the hell am I going to do?
I really just crawled into a little ball, like, you know, in a fetal position on the ground. I think we were talking about that a few weeks ago. How what happens when all of a sudden everyone no longer has access to the cloud and everyone depends on where they're going to eat, catching an Uber, knowing where they are physically on the planet phone. And so tell us.
I don't know how to get back
in this apocalypse, in this post cloud apocalypse. What did you do?
Did you use a
phone to survive?
Book?
I sat there until I could find it, and then I drove to a place that had Wi-Fi, and I used the Wi-Fi signal. I used the Wi-Fi signal to figure it out, and then all of a sudden it started working. I'm like, oh my God, you guys are killing me.
That's so here's classic. A pro tip. I don't know if you can do this on iPhone, but for Android, what I do, especially internationally, because first of all, the performance is usually less good for U.S. people traveling out, but I do the Google Map download area. And then you can actually get navigation, especially street walking navigation, offline. So a little pro tip there.
Wow, that's old school. That reminds me of
shit, I'm going to bust out
BlackBerry.
The Thomas Brothers guide.
The Thomas guide, yeah.
It never lets you down. I love it.
Paper's always working.
And do we have an explanation from the major providers? Oh, we have an outage. It was a cosmic rays? I bet it was cosmic rays.
It was gamma rays.
That's intense. So we got to see kind of what happened in the wild, and so you lost your way.
I swear to God, it was like it was the first episode of The Walking Dead when the guy woke up and the whole place had gone to shit, and I'm like, how the hell am I going to find my way home?
Did people start talking to each other?
No, it was pretty late. We went and watched Snowden. It was like, oh my God, that movie was so long.
Snowden jinxed it. He's the one who caused the outage.
Yeah, he probably did. He's like, Gabe, you're not getting home tonight.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to try this, guys, on my next trip, especially my next short trip. I'm going to go on a trip without my phone.
Oh,
get out of
dude,
here.
No,
don't
I'm going to do it.
No, you're not.
I would
no,
die.
You
would
die.
I used to do this. I used, believe it or not, I used to get on a plane and fly to the other side of the world without a phone.
We all did. I did when I was in college.
You should print out maps, too.
But I'm just saying, I'm going to try it. I think I'd actually be a lot less stressed and jittery. I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
I don't know. I'd be stressed and jittery. Yelp review for this place? I can't go into this restaurant.
Especially if I know the places and space. I'm going to try it.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, just to wrap that up, it wasn't in the story. They actually said that there was no specific information that's been released from the potential cause of the outage, not even gamma ray. So we're going to have to wait on that answer.
It was probably the NSA. They probably had a maintenance window in the data center.
Or it could have been. It could have been Yahoo out. Trying to
Yahoo. That's right.
On the mail. Do you like how I just transitioned that into? Yep. In the next story, so Yahoo apparently is spying on everyone. In addition to exposing all of its
passwords,
usernames and passwords to the world, it was also spying. So I think maybe one has to do with the other. There's some speculation out there that because they weren't actually hacked, they actually gave all of the passwords and usernames to like the NSA, and then maybe WikiLeaks just leaked them all. So maybe that was That was a course of events there, but no, Yahoo just can't catch a break while it's trying to get money for its ailing business and get a little bit of an exit for some people. It can't get out of its own way, and this is just piling on top of an already horrid news cycle for Yahoo.
Who's actually still actively going and using Yahoo?
I don't know. Anytime I get I give Nigel a hard time for his Hotmail account.
I still have an old Hotmail account.
You do? Do you have a Hotmail? Oh, maybe
not. Not that I've used it in like a decade, but it's still there.
All right. So Yahoo can't catch a break. One other interesting news item, too, is there's a partnership on artificial intelligence formed by Google, Facebook, Amazon, IBM, and Microsoft. Now, on one level, are on multiple levels. Some of these guys are mortal enemies. Yet somehow, they all came together and formed a Justice League for artificial intelligence.
A Justice League?
Yeah.
There's got to be federal funding involved.
Oh, I'm sure there is.
Yeah. I mean, what is it called?
It's called Skynet is what it's called.
Gold Skynet. No, it's called the Partnership on Artificial Intelligence to Benefit People and Society. Now, you know Mark came up with that name.
Yeah, to benefit people and society to be slaughtered and eaten by the robots.
Yeah. It was funny, actually. Mark and Andreessen was just chatting with, I think, GeekWire about some of the promises of AI and where we're at right now and kind of where we're going. And there's a lot of money getting thrown on this. So it will move forward in whatever form it takes. But it might be one of those things that these large companies don't get right because they're spending so much time trying to commercialize it. If Google was just doing it by itself as a moonshot, which, you know, it is doing some projects by itself. But this is a huge consortium of some really stodgy, curmudgeon companies in addition to some fast-moving, you know, companies. And even though there's a whole lot of money, A, getting everyone to agree on one thing at one time, I can't imagine these people moving anything forward a significant clip. On B, I'm sure there's going to be a wrangling over IP every step of the way. So it's going to be somebody cobbling a bunch of open source pieces together who's really going to crack AI, and it's not going to be these guys. I'm just putting that out there.
Well, the weird thing about the Guardian article is they had said that there's two big names missing, right? Which Apple was one that they identified. Yeah. And I was a little scratching my head on Elon Musk, I guess, referring to the Tesla. But it's one of those things that I just was like, why would they exclude those? But I think, honestly, you've got enough big brands in here that, especially if you look at, with the exception of Facebook, the hyperpublic cloud, it's all the big ones. They don't have the dark horse cloud, but they've got everybody else. But I think that's enough, right? You can't have too many cooks in the kitchen or too many, clouds in the sky.
Yeah, then you'd be OpenStack. We won't get started there. I already went back and forth with Nigel on Twitter on OpenStack today.
Yeah, well, that was a good joke. It's just, you know, only a few people who got it laughed.
Yeah. So, yeah, no Apple, no Elon Musk. And they say they're not going to lobby the government, but they will do research and make recommendations on best practices, which is exactly what lobbyists don't do.
Yes.
So as part of this consortium, Facebook's one of those people, and they've actually got something that that we wanted to wrap into a hot or not. So we're in the hot or not section, keeping the show tight today. Hot or not, Facebook at Work is launching next month. Now, for those of you who just haven't heard of it, and for those of you who had heard of it and don't care, I'm going to explain it anyways. It believes that, you know, it can keep individual employees engaged with the product even more while they're working, even though a lot of employers don't like it when people are on Facebook, except for the social media team in marketing. And they think they can compete with the likes of Yammer and Chatter and all these other pieces where they're, you know, of at-work social media. So with this, given sort of Facebook's, you know, penetration into the marketplace, though there's cultural barriers and sort of work policy barriers to really making this effective, Do you think this is hot? We'll start with you, Rick. You think this is hot, or is this just absolutely nothing? This is just an experiment.
This is the zero of not. I am absolutely not liking
negative
this at all. Yeah, triple negative, man. I mean, I'm giving all thumbs down here, and let me explain why. One, I think if they were going to try to do this, I think they're like 3 to 5 years late. I think there was a window where something like this might want to capture things like you've seen Salesforce Chatter do. You've seen things like Skype for Business absolutely making good inroads in the enterprise. Microsoft Office 365, you know, Slack even has come in and hit a really good market for this stuff in workplaces and work groups. I think they're just way too late. But on top of that, I don't trust it. There's too much back end intelligence, you know, on the last topic that goes into things like that. I don't know, but I would speculate in the roadmap for something like this is a metric of how effective your employee is. you know,
yeah, tracking them.
Would they read everything? Is everything on screen enough for them to have read all pieces of critical communication? How long do they spend actually interacting with things, right? There's a deep philosophical side of me that's going to quantify activity that isn't qualified by a perception, and that's a whole different set of logic. But I'm not at all a fan of it, and I know Gabe's going to hit on this too, but the other reason that I'm not at all a fan of it is it's way not what I need. I do not need another way of getting in touch with me. You know, even if something went away, you know, that's what drives me crazy. And I, in my own personal practice here, I'll tell you guys something. I'm looking in my office here. I've got my laptop, second screen over here. I've taken a 42-inch TV and mounted it vertical. So it's skinny and tall versus wide and short. And that TV is mounted on the wall exclusively for social media, like a Twitter stream or a Facebook feed. I do my work social media there because it's a total distraction.
So you're like VM World Village big screen?
That's right. And I got a bar. I got a bar in my office too. It's pretty cool.
Nice. Anyway, there you go. That's good.
But it's one of those things that even though something like Facebook for work would be catered to the work experience and such, the addictive and the drifting, the I don't really think there's a value in the workplace for a like of content and conversation like that. So you name it, I'm against it. There could be flame wars. There could be conversations out of control. There could be all kinds of things, and it's a new type of problem we already have. We already have reply to all on email getting out of control. Now we have these comments where people are going to drift, and you know every company has people that will have an opinion on the written form like that, and it's just noise. So you name it, I'm against it in every single way. Not that I have a strong opinion or anything.
All right. Well, I think you've made your opinion clear. Gabe, hot or not?
So not hot, because like the last person on this planet I trust for any of my crap at work is Facebook.
Come on, you can trust Mark.
Oh, come on. It's like, all right, hey, if it's free, guess what? It's going to make money somehow. It's going to be selling your trade secrets. It's going to be doing this, that. Come on. No way. No way in hell I would ever do this. And the last thing, you know, is I'm not going to have like a separate account at Facebook for work. That's so lame.
Yeah, you've got those two accounts now, Facebook. And like we were talking about earlier, just having more badges. Do we need more badges? Like, and like I love like Slack, for example. But before there was really a relevant need to use it, some people were like, well, let's do Slack. Well, what are we going to do with it? And this could be just like this. We're like, well, let's use Facebook for work. It's like, well, what are you going to do with it? It's just going to be another badge. And you're still going to have people that are using, you know, Salesforce Chatter, because that just won't go away. And you're still got, what, Google Hangouts and some other IM, you know, thing. And then you've got people that, you know, it seems like, you know, Twitter direct messaging. I mean, sending someone a DM on Twitter seems like the only way to reliably actually get a hold of anybody nowadays.
Well, the other part of it is like it's the 5,000 other things I have to communicate through. I got Slack, I got Twitter, I got Facebook, I got text messages, I got calls, I got email. I got so many different means to have to reach me. It's like I'm overloaded. And I got to check all these stupid things. What we need is just like, you know what? We need the universal communicator. Just one app that does everything. You know, it's implanted in your skull, and then you never have to bother with all the other things.
Okay. So we got two not hots, and I'm going to have to pile on here with a huge not hot. And just the fact that from a business standpoint, Facebook has not been able to successfully move itself into a position of being an enterprise platform for anything. And I don't think there's any argument that could go against that. And this is probably the worst entry point into a very crowded market of already entrenched players to add on another potential enterprise platform for anything would be folly. And I think this is probably one of the worst entry points they could possibly have. Facebook for work. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the logo here, putting their F on a little briefcase icon. That's not good enough. You're going to have to do a little more than that. For people,
but why? You know, but I don't get why the heck is it on a WordPress site? am I looking at that right? I'm at the web page for it. I'm like, now I'm really concerned if Facebook can't even put a proper web interface on it. I don't know, man. That's all kinds of not hot.
That sounds wrong.
Okay. It could have been a GeoCities page. You never know.
I think those are free now.
Sorry, GeoCities. Oh, man, you just took me back. All right, yes. So unanimous, not hot. Guys, I think that's it for this week.